Good afternoon and welcome. This is Iberian Connections, our weekly, for now, podcast with our guests for today. I have with me in the position of the interviewer, Bryce Lamela. He is a graduate student at Columbia University and friend. And he is going to be with me asking some questions to our guests, who are Beatrice Pasciuta. Beatrice is a professor at the University of Palermo and a specialist in many different fields. She's a legal historian, so we will talk about that a little bit later. But she is also directing a very important international research group on multicultural, multilingual, multi-confessional Sicily during the Norman Kingdom of Sicily. And we have also Emanuele Conte. Emanuele Conte is a professor at the University of Roma III. He is a professor of the faculty of the law school and a specialist in medieval Roman law in particular, but in general in Roman law. So, welcome and thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jesus.
And
thank you, Bryce.
Wonderful. So I have just one first question, maybe starting with you. One thing that is important to say is that this is going to be like the Norman Kingdom of Sicily or medieval Iberia. This is going to be a multilingual space. So don't worry if you hear many different languages, because that's only good. Beatrice, so tell us a little bit about your intellectual academic project in general.
Yes, thank you. If I can, I speak Italian. Yes.
Meraviglioso.
Yes, for me and for you.
For everybody. For you.
Dunque, sì, grazie per la domanda. Il mio progetto è un progetto abbastanza complesso, perché io lavoro in una facoltà di legge, insegno storia del diritto medievale e moderno, ma il mio percorso di formazione non è strettamente giuridico, ma è invece storico. Questo per il sistema italiano è uno strano percorso di formazione, questo ci tengo a dirlo, perché in Italia, a differenza per esempio degli Stati Uniti, il percorso di formazione in legge è un percorso unitario che dura tutta l'università, 5 anni, quindi io ho fatto un percorso misto e questo ha molto condizionato il mio lavoro e i miei percorsi di ricerca. Questa è la prima cosa che voglio dire, per cui avendo una formazione tipicamente da medievista, storica del Medioevo, l'approccio con il diritto nella sua dimensione storica si è rivelato particolarmente interessante, particolarmente fruttuoso per rivedere sia le acquisizioni tradizionali della storiografia pura sul Medioevo, sia soprattutto quelle della storia del diritto, perché in effetti la contestualizzazione storica di problemi giuridici vista dalla prospettiva dello storico rileva e rivela nuovi aspetti che io ho cercato, insomma, di mettere in evidenza nei miei lavori.
Okay, thank you to both for this very nice invitation. I'll try to speak English. You will forgive me for my mistakes and errors. I share with Beatrice this education in history, mainly in history. A little difference with Beatrice is that since the last years of university, I started to follow a lawyer who was temporarily at the Faculty of History in Rome, Ennio Cortese, who actually was, in my opinion, the most interesting legal historian in the second part of the 20th century. And he was a specialist on Middle Ages. So I started to follow him, and when I graduated in history, I graduated under his tutorship. So since the beginning, since I was, let's say, 21, 22 years old, I started to make classical legal history, very classical in the sense that it is centered on the Middle Ages and on legal science in school in the Middle Ages. So I did very classical legal history works on legal philology, glossators of the 12th century, and then legal institutions in the 12th and 13th century, and all was very classical in a certain sense. So this brought me to one of the things I found the most interesting, is that by when you deal with classical topics, you deal also with the ideas that were brought to legal history before you by generations of legal historians. So I realized that it was extremely important by dealing with such topics to do legal history and legal historiography. So to deal with the interpretation of the same topics or the same big issues given since the 19th century. So when I was 27, 30, I discovered the great history of legal history. So I discovered how interesting it was to deal with mainly the German legal historians have done about the so-called construction of legal identity. So my point became to make at the same time philology, so criticisms of what has been said about some documents. This is philology is nothing else than that. To criticize former editions, the form of the text you receive, and at the same time to criticize interpretation given by legal historians before me.
Thank you so much. So I think that there are some things that you share that we can start with. So I've noticed that both of you have come to this field a bit from the outside, both of you from history. And so I guess that the first question that comes to mind is the is like, what's your take on this like old debate as to what extent is law, like does law have an existence that's independent from the historical context in which it is, right? Like, is it, when we study the history of law, do we look at law as like this realm that it's independent, or do we look at it in like the context in which it emerged and how it related to other discourses? So what's your thoughts on this?
Sì, grazie, è perfettamente questo il punto, cioè inserire perfettamente il fenomeno giuridico all'interno del fenomeno storico in cui quel fenomeno giuridico nasce e si sviluppa, ma è vero anche il contrario, questa è la forza della storia del diritto, cioè è spiegare e comprendere meglio, quindi poter spiegare il fenomeno sociale attraverso l'esistenza di categorie giuridiche, cioè il giuridico organizza la società, non è solo il prodotto di una società, ma è anche lo strumento con il quale quella società si organizza. Dunque, nel mio percorso di studi, che è partito dallo studio della storia del diritto e delle istituzioni in Sicilia fra Federico II e il XV secolo, quindi la presenza poi appunto della Corona d'Aragona e di Alfonso il Magnanimo, eccetera. Quindi il mio iniziale percorso è stato questo, poi io sono passata a temi di storia del diritto che non avevano niente a che vedere con il contesto storico siciliano e adesso sono tornata per certi aspetti di nuovo a studiare la Sicilia andando un po' più indietro, quindi sui Normanni, ma la costante è proprio questa, cioè il legame stretto che c'è tra il fatto giuridico e il fatto sociale, che nella tradizione storiografica e anche della storiografia giuridica spesso invece sono stati separati, per cui l'oggetto di studio della storia del diritto è sembrato essere il diritto come se si potesse avere il diritto fuori dal contesto sociale, dunque non è una spiegazione soddisfacente. Invece, unendo le due prospettive, la spiegazione diventa più chiara e puoi includere, anzi devi includere, nello studio che fai, non solo la società e il diritto, ma anche la teologia, anche l'iconografia, anche la letteratura non alta, per esempio le prediche, per esempio le cronache, e tutto contribuisce a completare o comunque a rendere il mosaico un po' più chiaro. Ecco.
I share with Beatrice this point of view. So, in the last years, I'm starting to try to publish articles with an exact date in the title to stress the point that in legal history, things happen. A certain day or a certain year or in a certain period, something new happened in a certain moment, in a certain context, in a certain place, not everywhere. And not for a very long period. So just to support what Patricia said, the meaning of legal history, as it was invented in 19th century, was to stress continuity and identity. So the German historical school, founded by Savigny at the beginning of 19th century, was made to give an alternative to the way France had innovated the legal system through revolution and codification. So revolution and legislation change the legal framework. Savigny said, no, we will continue because what matters is identity. So there is a tradition in legal history, in continental legal history, and I will say also in British legal history, of stressing continuity and identity. So to tell a story in which nothing happens, because things remains always the same, you know. So the point coming from an historical education brings you to say history is the place where things happen. And also legal history is made by great happenings. In certain period, new things are introduced in the legal systems. The interest of the law, on the other side, is that these things last for a very long time and are reused and reused and reinterpreted constantly. So it is like if the patrimony of concepts, of creation, so we say of institutions, of legal systems, grow and grow and grow, and the lawyers, legislators, judges, lawyers, interpreters, use all this patrimony in different ways to face the society which changes. And sometimes, or very often, new institutions are added to this patrimony.
Yes.
You know? So, and this is very interesting for us, because we understand ourselves in this way. We understand from both sides, from what changed our society in a certain moment and why it changed. And we understand the institutions because we understand why and in which context they have been created. They have been added to the patrimony.
Yes.
And then we know that today we use the same institution in a very different way. You know? But the beginning mark those institutions, and we understand better the institution if we really understand why and in which context they have been introduced. So this is the double, the double interest of legal history, which make also for two historians like us the fascination of working with legal history and not with another kind of history. Social history is only a certain context, what happens, and then there are not institutions which are wonderful creations, you know, which are a piece of art because they are artificial, you know? And the art is introduced at a certain moment. Someone decided that four columns and a triangle are and are a figure in art, and you can use it in very, very different contexts, but this is patrimony of architecture forever.
Yes.
You know? And has been instituted in a certain context, in Greece, in a certain moment. You know, so.
Yes. I think this last point you are making now is very interesting, because there is, I can clearly see the criticism of continuity, but perhaps there has been a trend recently, and following Momigliano and this idea that integrating legal history into everything, that perhaps we have also lost a bit of sight of the many continuities that exist that actually make legal history a specific field, right? So like, we study medieval law maybe, but if we study the Siete Partidas was used in 19th century Louisiana as argument for to prove it enslaved status. So in the end, there is this whole continuity that it's also part of it. It just has to be very embedded in the historical context in which it operates. Yes.
When for what you say and let's confess also that's one of the reasons you are here is you are rarae aves in a faculty in a school of law. You both work in law schools.
Yes.
And yet you are historians in an environment in which normally the legal historians are lawyers, and therefore they are also the gatekeepers of the discipline itself. So, but it doesn't look like you are slightly removed from that position or from that duty of being gatekeeping the legal institutions or the integrity of the legal science and whatnot. So, what is what you want to do? What kind of transformation, epistemological transformation, do you want to introduce in the study of legal history, not from outside the field of legal history, but from inside, from the very faculty that should, from the very school that should be the one supporting the building, the artificial building, the artifact of legal science?
Difficile domanda e difficile risposta.
E per questo che la possiamo.
Quello che io tento di fare, vorrei fare, non so quanto riuscirò, o sono già riuscita, è appunto, potrei dire, ritornare a sporcarsi le mani con i documenti e con le fonti. E tornare a sporcarsi le mani con il Medioevo. Le due cose sono state messe un po' fuori dall'agenda degli studi di storia del diritto in Italia, specialmente dove la storia del diritto continua ad essere una materia molto importante nella formazione del giurista. È un insegnamento fondamentale, esistiamo in tutte le law schools d'Italia, ci sono storici del diritto, quindi questo è molto significativo, ma secondo me la storia del diritto deve da una parte ritornare, dall'altra cominciare a lavorare con quell'aspetto specifico del nostro sapere che non fa parte né della storia pura, né fa parte del diritto positivo, ed è la dimensione storica del diritto, la terza dimensione dello studio del diritto, che si fa soltanto e si comprende soltanto lavorando su più fonti, non soltanto sulle fonti della dottrina. E naturalmente per fare questo bisogna riappropriarsi di tutta una serie di saperi che attualmente sono un po' in via di estinzione. La conoscenza del latino, la conoscenza della paleografia, e ancora un'altra cosa, e questa secondo me invece è una novità, utilizzare saperi che tradizionalmente sono stati di altri campi disciplinari, quindi la teologia, quindi l'iconografia, quindi la letteratura, il teatro, tutto invece deve essere compreso nella visione del fenomeno di
What I think is that there are gatekeepers, but probably they keep a gate in an empty corral.
Because we all have read Kafka, and before the law we know the building is empty.
Yes, yes.
But we know the building has a gatekeeper with a tartar-like mustache.
Yes, yes. But the problem is that from a social point of view, law schools in Italy, in particular, but also in the whole continental Europe, are having fewer and fewer students. And also, watching my colleagues from inside, I have the impression that the most interesting are the ones who are able to understand other way of facing society, which are not exclusively legal systems, you know. So the interesting colleagues are the ones who are able to criticize the way public administration is done through algorithm. And to make an example. To make that, they have to learn a little bit of mathematics.
Yes.
You know? All the interesting colleagues are the ones who deal with informatics and electronics. Or with technical innovations in different fields, or with sociology, or with psychology, you know? So this is called in the United States law end. For legal history, the tradition, as Beatrice says, is not to do law end in history, but just law in history, which is make a kind of literary history of what the lawyer have written one after the other, as if they were just closing their offices without watching out of the window, which is not true, because in every time the most interesting lawyers are the ones who have been able to interpret the society,
yes,
and change in the change in the society, technical changes, economical changes, political changes.
Yes.
So when the lawyer have been able to see what happens, they have also been able to invent new legal institutions. If they have not, they are just repeat what they have learned without innovating anything. So I think that our role in the law faculties is exactly that, to remember to our colleagues that they have to learn other things and to watch outside the window.
So I think that you both are calling in a way also to expand which sources we can consider to be part of the history of the law, like which ways of knowing or which sources can become part of this story. And so I was interested, like you were talking about Sporcarsi Lemani and about philology, but also like mathematics, like this whole range of ways of knowledge that have not necessarily been applied, but that can be important to ask new questions. And I was just wondering, like, what's your impression of maybe the Italian university system, or in general, like universities as this space that can produce these scholars? Do you argue hopeful about our educational context as one that's able to give the time and the skills that are necessary to ask these questions, or how optimistic are you about this?
Sono poco ottimista. Penso che no, il sistema di educazione universitario non ha molti spazi per questo tipo di formazione, quindi su questo non sono ottimista, ma sono ottimista sul fatto che si possano trovare spazi alternativi per questo tipo di formazione, perché la mia esperienza personale mi dice che appunto l'esempio di questo grosso progetto di ricerca che la Comunità Europea ha finanziato, del quale io sono responsabile insieme al mio collega Jeremy Jones dell'Università di Oxford. Questa esperienza mi dice che è l'unico progetto che è stato finanziato con un tema di storia del diritto dall'Europa e riguarda proprio questo aspetto, cioè la storia del diritto medievale e questa idea, questa scommessa di leggere questa documentazione multilingue della Sicilia normanna, cioè latina, araba e greca, per la prima volta, la documentazione è nota, è stata studiata sin dal 1800, abbiamo edizioni, trascrizioni, ma quello che non è mai stato fatto, è un po' paradossale, è mettere insieme le competenze di queste tre realtà linguistiche, giuridiche e culturali, cioè la latina, l'araba e la greca, mettere insieme per leggere tutti insieme quei documenti, perché un documento scritto in tre lingue non può essere letto separatamente in tre ambiti diversi, è l'unico modo per comprenderlo è quello. Quindi penso che ci siano degli spazi di ricerca specialistici dove però quel tipo di competenze può veramente continuare a essere trasmesso e crescere.
Yes, also you have to consider that Europe has a lot of problems in this moment, but also there is a lot of potential. And the potential is the diversity of the traditions, of the cultural traditions. So the more people move, the more students continue to visit other universities and other countries, the more also ideas move all around Europe, and the more we can hope in a better education in the near future. For that, I think that every effort to close educational system in the national tradition is devoted to a failure, because it cannot work in Europe and in the world also. So, but Europe has enough diversity to have a great potential in the next years, if only we avoid the temptation of closing national systems.
Can I say something? Because I think that we are at the moment in which now, for what you have been saying now about the specific challenges of studying, for instance, medieval Sicily or the challenges of contemporary education in Europe. I don't want to mention here the name of Manlio Bellomo, who but you know, do you remember that book he wrote that was translated in English as the medieval
the common legal past of Europe.
So the common legal past of Europe is something very interesting. That was translated in 1985 here. So I gather it was more or less 84 or 83 when he published that. So at the peak of that moment of European dreams of unification and whatnot. But what kind of unification was that? It was a unification in which many, many different traditions were to be excluded. So the common legal past of Europe was Western civilization, and was jus commune, and was canon law, and civil Roman law, and but there were some very important traditions that are essential to understand not Europe, the Mediterranean basin, and the whole cultural interactions that take place during the Middle Ages everywhere, you know, that need to be included there. So I guess, so what you do, Beatrice, with Sicily, or what some people do when they study Iberia, is to sporcare their hands in that particular tradition. So to how to recover in a certain way that constitutive part of what we have come to call Europe. So a completely different version of Europe. And that's one particular element in which one could say what we do or what you do has a contemporary relevance. Mm. But beyond that, and in the kind of intellectual project that you have, so what would be, again, you know, the relevance, the contemporary relevance of the work we do? How is it a contemporary challenge to do medieval legal history, for instance?
Allora, posso rispondere pensando a due cose differenti. Una più specifica, che riguarda il mio attuale ambito di ricerca, è l'interesse per la contemporaneità è proprio nel multiculturalismo giuridico. Perché questo è uno dei problemi più grossi che abbiamo oggi in Europa, almeno, ma non soltanto. Anche
grossi,
Stati Uniti.
Bell'uomo.
E quindi spiegare che c'è stato un passato di multiculturalismo giuridico in cui sistemi differenti convivevano con ambiti precisi di applicazione, questo secondo me è molto interessante per l'oggi, al di là delle mitologie, ovviamente. No?
La mitologia della convivenza, per esempio.
La mitologia della convivenza va del tutto smontata attraverso una rigorosa indagine scientifica di tipo storico, ma a quella mitologia che poi è bipolare, perché o è convivenza o è odio e crudeltà, possiamo invece sostituire una narrazione che è scientificamente più corretta. Quindi questo è un punto di vista che secondo me interessa la contemporaneità. In generale però potrei dire che studiare storia del diritto medievale per l'oggi è comunque una sfida interessante, perché il diritto non si comprende senza la sua storia, non puoi capire qual è la situazione attuale del diritto senza fare ricorso alla storia. La storia è comunque un argomento che il giurista utilizza sempre, però lo utilizza male perché non lo sa usare, e invece attraverso uno studio di storia del diritto potrebbe cominciare a comprendere che la storia non è né l'evoluzione da un momento negativo all'oggi meraviglioso, quindi le magnifiche sorti e progressive, non è questo, e non è nemmeno, come diceva Emanuele, la continuità. Quindi non c'è una storia perché i concetti sono immanenti, è sempre stato così ed è così anche oggi. Quindi questi sono due modi di utilizzare l'argomento storico in maniera sbagliata, fuorviante. E non innocente, secondo me, non è molto maligno questo modo, è pericoloso. Invece uno studio storico serio può aiutare a guardare l'oggi, e forse perché no anche il domani, con uno spirito critico che il giurista di solito non ha. Ecco.
Just to make a little point about the work of Bellomo and also of Grossi, I think we can better understand all this if we take in consideration their education in legal history, so the influence of the German historical school on them. Take the example of the position of Iberian Peninsula. In the traditional narrative of legal history, there is just one appearance of Iberian Peninsula, it is the Visigoths. Because for German legal history, the history of German law, the Visigoths were Germans who brought civilization, or German civilization and German law to Spain. And because we have the best documentation of that age in Spain, in the Visigoths realm, German legal historians have considered the kingdom of the Visigoths just until the beginning of 6th century, because mm-hmm. they made two legislation,
mm-hmm.
The Roman law of the Visigoths and the law of the Visigoths. So it was perfect to say we had two legal systems, mm-hmm. German law and Roman law, which were paired together, and the two cannot be really mixed because mm-hmm. they are not compatible with each other. Mm-hmm. Then after that, Iberian Peninsula disappears, completely disappears from legal mm-hmm. history. And the narrative of legal science is the narrative of the light mm-hmm. of legal science, which is which begins in Italy with the mm-hmm. Bologna school,
mm-hmm.
then goes to France with the humanism,
mm-hmm.
then from France goes to the Netherlands
mm-hmm.
With the Elegant school, and from Netherlands arrives finally in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Where legal science, the knowledge of Roman law, arrives and finds mm-hmm. his Heimland, his patria.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. From this story, Spain is completely excluded.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Spain was extremely important politically at the center mm-hmm. of all the European history.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now this vision has been corrected,
mm-hmm.
and in Germany there is the Max Planck Institute that is just interested in Spanish and Latin American legal history.
Mm-hmm.
So they are trying mm-hmm. to include very much Iberian Peninsula and Spanish culture
mm-hmm.
in the narrative of legal history. But at the age when Bellomo studied and wrote, this was not done yet.
Yes.
So the story he tells is still the story made in 19th century and remade by Francesco Galasso in the first half of the 20th century in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to consider the narratives.
Mm-hmm.
The narratives are the stories of law.
Yes.
Which are very hard to die,
mm-hmm.
and people tend to reconsider the same narrative.
Mm-hmm.
I think that every one of us does the same mistake,
mm-hmm.
so it's tied to the story which he has listened when he studied
mm-hmm.
and continues to tell in some way. So
mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to make the big effort Beatrice is doing,
mm-hmm. yes.
looking at what happened from a Mediterranean point of view and not
mm-hmm.
from a German point of view. So it if you want, it's paradoxical
mm-hmm.
that Manlio Bellomo wrote this book sitting in a city which
mm-hmm.
is much closer to Tunisia than to Frankfurt,
mm-hmm.
but he told a German story.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting to come back to your project on documenting multiculturalism, that and to return to all these ideas about different legal traditions that coexisted, and even to talk about different legal traditions coexisting is a bit misleading, because what we see is a lot of crossing, and right, if we looked at the sources, we can find things an abbot that accepts an oath that's sworn on the Quran, and things it's not either different legal systems in isolation, but it's a much more, as you said, if we get our hands dirty, we get to much more complicated and hybrid stories.
Yes, it's very complicated. Io penso che sia una storia che non abbiamo ancora scritto,
mm-hmm.
dunque
yeah.
è proprio questo che stiamo lavorando.
Mm-hmm.
Stiamo cercando di fare un vocabolario delle parole del diritto dai documenti, prendendoli dagli adattamenti
mm-hmm.
nelle varie lingue.
Yeah.
Dunque questa storia non è ancora scritta, ma è quella che manca, il pezzo
mm-hmm.
mancante.
Mm-hmm.
Ci stiamo lavorando, quindi ancora non posso dare risultati definitivi, non li ho.
So we have a couple of minutes left before the scene falls on our heads. I have one question, just 1 minute each, which is part also of my interest in a series of interviews that I have been conducting for the last 3 years. And the central question is about what is academic
freedom now, and how do we deal with academic freedom in political spaces, contemporary political spaces, in which academic freedom is not just historically has been historically protected, but also protecting it is curtailing it somehow. So Beatrice, for instance, it is not a secret that you are a professor and that you are involved as well in administration at many different levels, that you are a feminist and that you work you work and you fight to make the female academic voice more present in academia at very different levels. So what are the kind of reactions that this fight finds in the academic structures and the political academic structures that you work in? And that's just 1 minute. Oh. And Emanuele, you it is not a secret either that you have been involved in academic politics and academic policy as well, and that you have at a certain point also in your life participated in the government of the university. And also, what is your feeling and your experience about academic freedom in this particular moment in your institutions?
Grazie per la domanda. sì, io penso che la battaglia debba essere fatta per la presenza femminile nell'università, perché siamo davvero molto indietro, siamo molto più indietro di quanto non si pensi o di quanto non si voglia ammettere. Sto cercando di segnalare i convegni per soli uomini, che sono moltissimi nell'ambito del diritto, è quasi la maggior parte dei convegni destinata invitano solamente relatori maschi. Questo non è possibile, e non è possibile non per la mia generazione, per me, io ho fatto la mia carriera combattendo, ma l'ho fatta, ma è un messaggio che bisogna lanciare per le giovani generazioni, e quindi per le donne è molto più difficile. Devo dire che tutto questo per me è difficile, è una battaglia che costa molto in termini di esclusione, di difficoltà di trovare spazi, e dunque sì, dal punto di vista della libertà accademica, non dico che, no, che io non abbia libertà accademica, ma non credo che ci sia un uguale accesso a tutti i livelli della carriera accademica fra maschi e femmine, assolutamente no. Quindi bisogna continuare certamente a combattere per questo, io lo farò sicuramente. Grazie.
I think in this field of equal possibility for gender, the only issue is now affirmative actions, which are completely now absent from Italian politics. Mm. So there is no affirmative action to guarantee the same number of professors, the same number of participants to academic councils and president of universities and so on. In general, for Italy, I can speak a little bit about Italy and France, where I work the most. My opinion, also visiting pretty much in the UK and sometimes also in the US, the big difference is about autonomy of educational and scientific enterprise in the university. In Italy and in France, the entity which decides programs of education and programs of scientific research is government. And in Italy, universities are autonomous, but only from a financial point of view. So they can pay, they cannot decide how much to pay, but they have their budget and they pay salaries. But they cannot decide how much legal history, how much private law, how much public law, how much law end is taught in the law departments, mm-hmm. because it is the government which decides it. Mm-hmm. And this is very much against academic liberty, in my opinion. It is against the social function of academic freedom. Academic freedom serves a modern society because deciding about education and deciding about research is a very complicated issue and a very specialized issue, and the government is less specialized than a council of professors or researchers on these issues. And if it's the government who decides, the decision will not be very, very useful for society.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Beatrice Basciuta. Thank you, Emanuele Conte. Thank you, Bryce Lamela, for accompanying us in this recording of a podcast for Iberian Connections. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.